دشت گوهر. But it seems that the people of Dahani Ghulaman even prepared an architectural plan for the construction of their alleys and ordinary houses. The urban planning, the architecture, the temple, the location and size of what remains of this ancient city have led scholars to believe that it was a satrapal capital or something very similar to it in character. Studies into the origins of the hearths, fireplaces and altars have tried to reveal their purpose since they have a unique architecture. Were they used for animal sacrifices, since animal blood was found on the altars? What kind of rituals were performed here? All these studies have tried to find answers to the many questions that arose 40 years ago with the unearthing of the site and have never been completely answered, even to this day. Standing atop the nearby hill that gives you an overview of the site, you can see lakes filled with a considerable amount of water around it.
The Chaimima reservoirs in the south of Zabul are three big lakes that are the second most important water storage reservoirs in the region. The water stored in these big lakes is used to irrigate the Sistan Plain and to provide drinking water for the cities of Zabul and Zahedan.
Trees were planted all around the lakes by the University of Zabul to prevent dust from falling into the water. This is Gulnar Farnoodi for Iran.
As we continued our tour of Arras in northwest Iran, in the remote areas of the region, I found the opportunity to learn more about its history and its folklore. It is interesting to see how villagers in these remote mountains have managed to keep all their traditions alive. Traditions that go beyond simple eating habits.
Games are an inseparable part of human culture. That's why as you study any ancient civilization, you will definitely find some very old games.
The village of Gulfaraj had its own museum of anthropology where I could find plenty of interesting information about the people that have been living here for thousands of years, including information about the local games that they played.
About games, most of us imagine a group of kids playing, but there are many games that even grown-ups can enjoy.
A game that is surprisingly reminiscent of baseball, making me wonder if this American sport actually originates in Iran. But anyhow, this game definitely encourages teamwork and requires a very fit body and healthy lungs. And as you can see, it is very popular among grown-ups, even the elderly. Playing with knuckle bones, especially those of a sheep, is one of the oldest games that many ancient civilizations have in common. However, there are many different ways of using them. Most of the games are played by throwing them up and catching them in different manners. Again, another popular game among grown-ups as well as kids. Meanwhile, the dusty alleys of the village never seem to be quiet after school. The games are simple. You don't need anything special. A ball made of leftover bits and pieces of cloth and a few stones. Even a couple of pebbles are enough to keep the kids busy. And if everything else fails, there's always a song they can sing together.
Dusha Banda Dusha is a popular game played by kids. It literally means capturing the violet, but I really don't know how it's played, which is why I'm joining them.
From what I learned, solidarity is the name of the game. One side loses when its human chain is broken by a member of the opposing team. And although they didn't use a sheep today, they still learned problem-solving skills and creativity. Yusumisha Ahmadi for Iran.
Across the seven skies, see a pure heart never lies. The words you learn will never earn. It's time to think and wonder why. Stars above will always be a shining guide for us to see. And when I doubt, I'll have no doubt, but still I wonder why. Digging through our pages past, wondering how the truth will last. God take control of what I found. I think I'll try this time around. And no one really feels the path I seek. And no one's gonna care as much as unfold. Their glory is unique, we're told. The stories mark a precious past, but do we question why? A quest for truth can never be a lot I've faked inside of me. I walk in shoes I've never felt, only then I'll sure know why. They tell me just make up your mind, the path I see just needs a sign. The end is where I wanna be, which way I go is up to me. And no one really feels the path I seek, and no one's gonna care as much as me. I know you cared as much as me. Our stories were shared for us to see. And perhaps it's best to part and be. And maybe we'll find the path we seek tonight. Let it be. Only God really knows what's right. Maybe.
Salam and welcome, dear listeners from the capital city of Tehran. I'm coming to you with a vibrant lineup of programs designed to engage your mind and lift your spirit. For this hour, we start with For a Better Life, hosted by Ms. Nahid Ash'ari. This program has one noble aim, and that is to teach excellent practical ethics and morals, which can use in our lives from the point of view of Islam. In this program, we examine a range of practical and applied ethical and moral issues. Practical wisdom for daily living. Then we bring you Ulema's speech. In this program, we broadcast excerpts from the Farsi and Arabic voices of well-known and reputable Islamic and Shia scholars and authorities with English translation, a unique opportunity to learn from the masters. After this, we turn our attention to Israel Watch. Following that, we illuminate with the lantern, hosted by Ms. Zainab Sadat Mousavi. This program expounds and explains moral teachings from an Islamic perspective through telling of fables and stories which are rich in morals. Then it's time to explore a fulfilling life with A to Z of life. Sister Zainab James will present an Islamic Iranian lifestyle. This program presents an Islamic Iranian lifestyle in a variety of ways, making use of the ayahs of the Holy Quran, hadith, as well as inspirational poetry, parables, and stories. Coming up is For a Better Life. Don't go anywhere.
This is For a Better Life. For a Better Life.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Welcome back to For a Better Life on IRIB English Radio. This is Nahid, having the honor of being with you on this episode, where we explore the timeless values of Islamic spirituality through the words of the wise, the teachings of the Prophet, and the light of the Quran. Today's topic is one of the most sensitive and often neglected aspects of our faith. What we are going to talk about is haqq an-nas, the rights of other people. Islam does not only ask us to worship Allah with devotion, it also demands that we deal justly with His creation. Worship without justice is incomplete. Prayer without fairness is hollow. Haqq an-nas, or the rights of others, is about how we treat people properly. How we treat and respect their dignity, their time, their feelings, and even their reputation. On the Day of Judgment, Allah may forgive what is between you and Him, but He will not forgive what is between you and His servants, unless they forgive you. Well, for the first part, let's go for one very short part of Saadi Shirazi's Golestan as the famous Persian prose writer and poet, and see how, in the lens and in the view of a Muslim man of literature, we have this beautiful matter mentioned. Saadi writes, a man stole a neighbor's goat. When he was brought before the judge, he denied it. The judge asked, if your neighbor claims falsely, he carries the burden of sin. But if you lie, the burden is yours, before the people and before God. The man confessed. Saadi writes, the world may not always witness your injustice, but the balance of the Day of Judgment misses nothing, and the sigh of the oppressed will weigh more than your excuses. This story reminds us that we're not only answerable to courts, we are answerable to conscious, and beyond conscious, to our Creator, to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. A goat may seem small, but a stolen right, however small, can become a mountain on the day when scales are set. The Holy Book of Quran is clear on this issue. Do not consume one another's wealth unjustly or send it to the judges. Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam once asked his companions, "Do you know who the bankrupt person is?" They said, "The one with no money." He replied, "The bankrupt is the one who comes on the day of judgment with prayers, fasting, and charity. But he has insulted this one, stolen that one, harmed another. His good deeds will be taken and given to them. And when he runs out of good deeds, their sins will be placed upon him." Imam Ali alayhi salam had also mentioned in the book of Nahjul Balagha, "Be aware of the prayer of the oppressed, for there is no veil between it and Allah." Imam Sajjad alayhi salam lists not only the rights of people's bodies and property, but even the rights of your neighbor, your teacher, your student, and those who wrong you. It's a detailed map of how to live in society without taking more than our share. Our share of space, be it our share of time, our share of energy, or our share of trust, just believing in other people and those not respecting ours. Let's go for a short break, then we are going to delve deeper into this important matter and this great feature that has been highlighted on the Day of Judgment and on our destiny.
ارتباطتون رو با خدا قوی کنید. در مسائل دینی به نقاط عقلانی و ظریف.
Improve your connection with God. Pay attention to logical and detailed points in religious issues and learn them from great masters. There are sentiments in religion, but they rely on deep ideality and deep thought. This thought must be learned.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Welcome back. In our daily lives, Haqq al-Nas is everywhere. It's in the extra minutes you take when someone is waiting in line, and the gossip you share about someone who's not present, in the pen you borrow and forget to return, in the rent you delay unfairly, and the noise you make while others try to rest, and even in the internet bandwidth you take without asking. Every single action that affects another human being, intentionally or carelessly, can become Haqq al-Nas. A powerful narration from Imam Baqir alayhi salam mentions, "The most severe sin is the one whose doer thinks it is small." So many of us may carry hidden debts, unpaid favors, unreturned belongings, unspoken apologies. But it's never too late to make things right. So now, let's talk about Islam and the features that can heal this problem. If it's never late for us, if we have still this opportunity of apologizing, let's see how Islam not only warns us, but also it gives us a path for healing. The first feature is to return what was taken. If you owe money, property, or time, repay it. The other way can be seeking forgiveness. If you hurt someone, sincerely apologize or make dua for those you wronged. If they are unreachable or passed away, pray for them and give charity on their behalf. Our great Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam had said, "Whoever has wronged his brother in anything, let him seek his forgiveness before a day comes when there will be no dinar or dirham, when there will be no money and no coins to compensate." Let us take this seriously. The soul may feel light now, but it will feel the weight of rights on that day. On the day that we are going to be judged by our actions and the way, and the day that we are going to be decided on by whatever tree we have planted in this world, that day is going to be near and we have to stay aware or whatever will befall us and whatever action we have taken in this world. So not only حق الناس, not only the rights of others are going to be counted, but also this is the kind of sin that will not be forgiven by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And this is what He has promised. It's surprising. It is shocking that He has promised that this is nothing to be forgiven by me. This is something that has to be forgiven by that servant of me that you have wronged. So, dear listeners, we are not only servants of Allah, we are stewards of each other's dignity. Let us tread this world lightly. Let us return what is not ours. Let us ask forgiveness and forgive. And let us make sure that when we stand before Allah, we come with hearts clean, not only of sin, but of stolen rights. Because the better life we all seek begins with justice, and justice begins at home, with ourselves. Thank you for listening. And remember, every voice raised with truth, every hand extended in apology, and every hand extended with apology, and every wrong made right, is a step toward peace in this world and light in the next. Until we meet again, walk gently, speak kindly, and live honestly. May peace, mercy, and divine justice surround you. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
The only thing that remains is that feeling of warmth in your heart that will always be there. Be there.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Ilm-e Fiqh az ulum sharifiye islami.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
among
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech on IRIB English Radio. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Husseini Qomi. Please stay tuned.
در منابع قدیمی ما آمده است که از ولی عصر ارواح ناخدا هنگام ظهور با یاران خودشون یک پیمان نامه ای امضا می کنند.
In the old Islamic references, we find that when Imam al-Mahdi reappears, he first took an allegiance from his followers. In that allegiance, Imam al-Mahdi set some conditions for those who are willing to pay allegiance to him. One important condition is that no one is allowed to change the conditions which are set by the Holy Imam. Another very important condition is that the followers of the Imam must not be after amassing wealth or property.
خدا رحمت کند مرحوم علامه طباطبایی رضوان الله علیه در تفسیر المیزان در ذیل این آیه شریفه سوالی مطرح کردن در قرآن آیه رو خونده ای.
The late Allama Tabatabai has a beautiful explanation under Ayah 34 of Surah Tawbah. In that ayah we read, those who treasure up gold and silver and do not spend it in the way of Allah, inform them of a painful punishment. The late Allama states that even if we pay our individual obligatory Islamic payments, like zakat or khums, we must still be concerned with our payments at the societal level. One such occasion when people must spend from their individual income for collective purposes is when an Islamic land is at war with an enemy. So we see that Imam al-Mahdi's emphasis on no amassing wealth has a logical reasoning behind it. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech on IRIB English Radio, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Husseini Qomi. To find out more about this program and our other programs, please visit our website at iranradio.ir. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
You kill in the name of freedom. You kill in the name of democracy. You kill in the name of God. But not in my name will you kill. Is it not enough what you've done with all the bloodshed you've caused? Yet your greed drives you on. In your brutal race for acquisition, no land is left untouched, driven by a vile ambition to have the whole world in your clutch. Every single new addition to your slave colony does nothing to dull your ambition to leave no nation free. It is indeed a sad condition that you suffer from, this itching desire for prime position to have all under your thumb. Not in my name will you fight.
against your evil methods of violence and intimidation, against your hijacking and misinterpretation of my peaceful faith and revelation. I shout with billions in this demonstration. Not in my name will you fight. Not in my name will you kill. Not in my name will you burn a child. Not in my name will you love. Not in my name will you invade. Not in my name will you pray. Not in my name will you dare to speak again. Not in our name. Not in our name.
Thank you for joining us. The Hebrew Media focused in its analysis and expert commentary on the ongoing reach ceasefire agreement in the Gaza Strip and the exchange of captives, as well as on the repercussions of the Yemeni support front for Gaza and the attacks that targeted ships heading to the occupation's ports. Also on the agenda was the normalization talks between Tel Aviv and the Golani government. These topics will be the focus of this episode, discussing it with Dr. Mohammed Suaidan, academic and writer in international affairs, joining us here in the studio. Hello and welcome, Dr. Mohammed. The special operation that targeted Zionist soldiers in the Gaza Strip, in which one of them was nearly captured by the resistance fighters after being wounded, was a major topic in Hebrew media. Commentators were struck with amazement and fear, especially since the footage released by Al-Qassam of the operation contradicted the occupation army's claims that the soldier had faced the fighters, when in fact he was fleeing the scene after being wounded. Well, Dr. Mohammed, how do you explain this intensified operations against the Israeli soldiers, occupation forces, after 21 months?
Well, to be honest, here there are two sides, the tactical one and the strategic one. On the tactical level, I think it's a major failure for the Israeli army. The Israeli army isn't just a small group of people fighting. It's one of the best armies in the world. It has been inside of Gaza for nearly 2 years, and till now, it hasn't been able to eliminate the threat inside Gaza. More than that, the areas where these operations are happening are far 2 to 3 kilometers to the Israeli settlements, so they are too near. The Israeli army have never left, even during the ceasefire, never left part of these places. Still, they are being hit by the Palestinians. Okay. So today, on the tactical level, it's a huge failure. But the most important thing is on the strategic level. For this operation to continue, this means that till now, after 21 months, Israel didn't achieve any strategic goal in the region, regardless of how much killing there is, how much damage there is. But let's see what are the strategic goals. In Gaza, there is still a very strong resistance that is making the Israeli pay a huge cost, and it still can veto a ceasefire agreement that doesn't maintain
its
interests.
You spoke about clear strategy also. Clear strategy. Yes. What is it?
It's
because in yesterday's episode, our own guest actually highlighted, analyzed, he said that, well, when asked a similar question, he said that the resistance fighters, Palestinian resistance, developed techniques after 21 months that allowed them to retrieve their own power and go back to the battlefield stronger than ever.
This is what the Americans have been saying to the Israelis since day one. Since they told them that this is an insurgent, they call it an insurgent
group. They learned
group.
From their mistakes.
They learned from their mistakes in Afghanistan and Iraq and in different places. Resistance groups learn throughout war. That's why it's written in...
During the war.
Yes, it's written in American academia that when you go and fight resistance groups, you shouldn't go for a long time, because as the war moves more with time, you will have less leverage as a country or state or Israeli entity, and the resistance will be able to tolerate, to learn more from the battlefield, and it will make you inflict more costs. And this is what we are seeing today.
It can recruit more also.
It can recruit more. It can learn Israeli tactics, how to avoid them, how to avoid Israeli AI intelligence, how to avoid Israeli military.
To understand the deficiencies, where are they?
To understand what's the main power with them and how they can inflict damage on the Israelis. So they had 21 months to learn how the Israeli acts. On the other hand, if you see what the Israelis are saying, they haven't been able to understand till now how the Palestinians are fighting. So we have a small resistance group that's understanding how the Israeli is fighting and learning how to increase the pain on them. And on the other hand, we have one of the best armies in the world not able to understand till today how the resistance works inside of Gaza.
So if they maintained all these strengths that you've been highlighting, does that mean that we will witness an escalation now, as long as they're seen as successful and maintained immunity, let me say?
I think this depends on how much resources they have inside of Gaza. What's sure for now is that they have the manpower, and this is enough to make the Israelis pay the price, and this is enough to let Hamas be able to veto a ceasefire agreement. I think this is the most important thing today, is that Hamas is still able to refuse the conditions that they don't want in the ceasefire agreement.
Because they're making a difference on the ground.
Exactly.
Okay. Hamas is still strong, and it's regaining its strength both militarily and in numbers. This was acknowledged by Israeli military sources before the Knesset, indicating that the occupation forces failed to destroy the tunnels, which currently accommodate many resistance fighters. We actually spoke about these escalation and intensifying resistance operations. However, Dr. Mohammed, why hasn't Israel been able to wipe out Hamas after 21 months of war?
First of all, because Hamas is a resistance group, as long as there's one Palestinian alive inside of Gaza, he will resist the occupation. So, and that's what the Americans were saying for the Israelis. Don't go and put a very unachievable goal like destroying Hamas, because it's
a resistance group. They have the most sophisticated weapons on earth, and the logistics and the international support, the European support, the American support, all kind of missiles that they could dream of, all technology that they want.
Let's not forget.
Why is that possible? Why is not allowing them?
Let's not forget that the U.S., the American Empire, during its high level of leading the world, have been stuck in Afghanistan for 20 years. So it's not about what you have of missiles or intelligence or weapons. It's about the fighter on the ground. When the fighter on the ground is a resistance that believes that he has to continue fighting until death, then you will have what's happening today in Gaza. Do you know the most important thing when I was hearing I was hearing the Israeli media is that I always believe in the effect of perception, because what you perceive is how you act or react. If we see Israeli media today, many in Israel don't believe that Israel had been able to achieve something. In their perception, Israel failed. So when everything ends, it will end at the war will stop at the end of the road. When this war stops, Israel won't be able to have a victory narrative for almost 2 years inside of Gaza.
But Netanyahu's advertising for absolute victory.
Exactly.
On
this
all
comment,
fronts,
this
by
comment
the way.
And other comments tell us that Israelis perceive what's happening today as a strategic failure. Even if we read today what the Americans are saying or Israelis are saying in their media, it's always speaking about a lot of tactical achievements without one strategic achievement. And that's their problem.
A failure in achieving objectives.
Exactly.
All objectives.
Exactly.
The campaigns against Netanyahu and his ministers are intensifying within the entity due to the continued war on the Gaza Strip and the human losses suffered by the occupation army. Israeli opposition leaders have confirmed that the war continues for Netanyahu and his ministers for personal reasons. What do you think is behind this vocal campaign against Netanyahu, and what are the personal gains that they're speaking about that he wants to achieve?
No, the personal gains mainly are maintaining power, still being the prime minister of Israel, because at different phases, his staying in this place was being threatened. He knows that as long as the war continues, then he will be able to have the votes of the far right. He will be able to have the Israelis around him because Israel is now at war. So the main interest is him gripping on power, staying in the prime minister's chair.
Yes.
And I think what's there, first of all, we have to understand something. There are many reasons that the war is still continuing. One of them is definitely Benjamin Netanyahu's drive to stay in power. And they are expressing this. Of course,
yes.
Of course, part of their expressing is regarding Israel's internal.
And to confirm that what you're actually analyzing, Dr. Mohammed, the New York Times a couple of days ago released an article stating that Netanyahu is trying to actually prolong this war for his own personal stance. And this is like the first time that we see New York Times clearly and vividly explaining these kind of factors, especially when it comes to Israel and a close ally.
Yes, but look how I view American media. American media, especially New York Times and the Washington Post and the main American media outlets, they are all driven by political goals. So when an American media states such a thing, it means this has been the truth for a long while, but now it's the political moment.
They decided to release it.
It's the political moment to release such news. Because
so what's the political moment?
Because some in the U.S. need to pressure Netanyahu to accept the ceasefire agreement today offered on table. So this is part of the pressure of some political groups on Netanyahu. That's how they work. But for the news to be able to get out today, this means this has been the truth for a long while.
They
now is the political moment. So yes, Netanyahu's personal gains are one of the reasons. And I can't even imagine that tens of thousands of people in Gaza have been killing. One of the reasons for that is Benjamin Netanyahu's political interests. And the whole world knows it, and no one is moving.
So despite the fact that these kind of criticism is actually intensifying in the West more than any other time, Dr. Mohammed.
Yes.
Now, moving to Syria, where direct talks are taking place between Israeli officials and officials in the Julani government on normalization. One of these close to the Syrian president expressed to the Hebrew media the Julani's government's desire to seize the rare opportunity that now presents itself for peace in the region with the Israeli occupation entity.
Said that every 100 years there's always a unique opportunity that comes probably once in a century. And there is this opportunity for peace in the Middle East right now, but we need to take advantage of it. And my understanding is that Syria wants to take advantage of it. We don't want our country to be a launching pad for wars against or attacks or terrorists against anyone, including Israel, looking for is the stop of the military incursion, respect the sovereignty of Syria, stop interfering in internal affairs, and try to resolve these issues through dialogue. Syrians, in a way, were very happy that Israel took out the leadership of Hezbollah and most of their capabilities, so Syrians could topple the Assad regime. For Syrians, Iran is it was the number one enemy. So for us, the weakening of Iran is a pleasant thing to see.
Do you think that Syria would actually join the Abraham Accords?
I'm definitely sure they will join the Abraham Accords. They are expressing it. They want it. They need it. They feel they need it, sorry. But I have some comments on what he was saying.
Yes.
Because we always hear the word peace. Everyone links the Abraham Accords and the deals with Israel with peace. Today, we have to redefine peace. What the resistance is doing is searching for peace. When when Bashar al-Assad when he left Syria, this wasn't a reason for Israel to attack. This wasn't a reason for peace to not be found. But Israel chose the moment. Even when Ahmed al-Shara and different Syrian political leaders were saying, we want peace with you, we want to go to an agreement with you, we won't attack you. It's the first time in history that one country is saying to the other country that we want peace, we don't want to attack you, we are friends, we want to do whatever you want, take the Golan Heights, take whatever you want. Still, Israel insisted on destroying all the capabilities of the military army, killing Syrians and destroying
and
damaging.
But these voices are on the rise. However, here a major question is supposed to be asked. So what do you think of these very frank, hostile remarks against Iran and Hezbollah from al-Julani side, from Syrian side?
Yes. You know, I have...
An accommodation or when they're asking for peace with Israel?
I have a belief that many in the region treat Iran and its allies, number one, and Israel as a bridge. How is that? When the countries of the region need to flatter the U.S. and get it to convince
closer.
It about something, then they will go and attack Iran and Hezbollah, and they will flatter Israel. So these countries treat Hezbollah.
It's only
Iran,
for politics, it's not real hatred.
No, I really don't.
Or awkward plans being prepared.
No, there are two factions. Most of the people speaking today are out of interest, because if the same people, if they were doing 2 or 3 years back, they will have spoken differently. It depends on the political moment, the political interest, but. There are also some that have a strong belief that about Hezbollah, especially religious beliefs regarding Sunnis, Shias, and everything.
Yes.
And this is a reflection of what the Americans have been doing in the region in the last 2 decades. So we have two groups. One that capture the political moment and just... I think that Ahmed Sharaa is one of the guys that has the first group. I think he doesn't have an ideological problem with Iran or Hezbollah, but on the other side...
But Israel can fuel that, can play on that aspect.
Yeah, of course.
It's
but
a possibility.
Yes, but he is a guy that moves
yes.
left and right based on his political, on the political interests and political moment. That's why he sold the Palestinian case. He sold everything he believed for just to be a president today. And we have to see what he is willing
to sell. In order to maintain power, maybe he wants to please the Americans and the Israelis.
What he will sell later on.
Israeli social media actually interacted with the ongoing normalization talks with Syria, where commentators made the case that reaching an agreement with Syria without a Palestinian state is a victory for the Israeli entity.
Yaniv, if we can integrate Syria without conditions imposed on us, that means we've won. Eitan, normalization with Syria and Saudi Arabia must be on our terms, of course, and without a Palestinian state. Privacy account. Syria is fragmented and allied with Turkey, which gives it borders with Israel. Our normalization with Damascus will help us cooperate with it to confront any potential Turkish attack on us.
Dr. Mohammed Sweden, academic and writer of international affairs, thank you very much for joining us
thank
in this
you.
Episode.
Chased by wolves, followed by a hawk. On the battlefield, you took your final walk. It took my breath when you said goodbye. But then again, heroes never die. Your final words were stay the course. Trust in God, the everlasting source. Don't give in to the enemy's plots. Resist with faith, go against the odds. Your way I follow, oh my hero. Unbreakable soul, unstoppable power. Until the last breath, you never surrender. Unshakable faith, unwavering sacrifice. Make you the hero we'll remember forever. Your blood was spilled, but it nourished my roots. I then became a tree with many fruits. The fruits are love, courage, and resolve. You've made me a soldier, so you I salute. Your way I follow, oh my hero. Oh.
unbreakable soul, unstoppable power. Until the last breath, you never surrender. Unshakable faith, unwavering sacrifice. Make you the hero we'll remember forever. A hero.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim, in the name of Allah. Salam and welcome. You are listening to Lantern, a new story, and many moral issues about this story. And today's story entitled, Detaching Yourself? Yes, Detaching Myself. And this is important, not just for someone like me who is dying, but for someone like you who is perfectly healthy. Learn to detach. He opened his eyes. He exhaled. Don't cling to things, because everything is impermanent. But wait, I said, aren't you always talking about experiencing life? All the good emotions, all the bad ones. Yes, well, how can you do that if you're detached? You're thinking, Mitch. But detachment doesn't mean you don't let the experience penetrate you. On the contrary, you let it penetrate you fully. That's how you're able to live it. I'm lost. Take any emotion, love for a woman, or grief for a loved one, or what I'm going through, fear and pain from a deadly illness. If you hold back on the emotions, if you don't allow yourself to go all the way through them, you can never get to being detached. You're too busy being afraid. You're afraid of the pain. You're afraid of the grief. You're afraid of the vulnerability that loving entails. But by throwing yourself into these emotions, by allowing yourself to dive in all the way over your head even, you experience them fully and completely. You know what pain is. You know what love is. You know what grief is. And only then can you say, all right, I have experienced that emotion, I recognize that emotion, now I need to detach from that emotion for a moment. Maury stopped and looked me over, perhaps to make sure I was getting this right. I know you think this is just about dying, he said. But it's like I keep telling you, when you learn how to die, you learn how to live. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. Dear audience, welcome to a new episode of Lantern from IRIB English Radio. This is Zainab Musavi, and in this program, what we do is to listen to certain religious stories and then try to take out some of the important themes and lessons that we can make use of them in our daily lives as Muslims. Well, today we want to talk about the philosophy of difficulties and the sorrows in life and the way they affect our worldwide and ideology towards life. You know, life is full of challenges and difficulties. It consists of different events that result in various feelings and emotions. Marriage, divorce, birth, death, success, failure, wealth, poverty,
health and sickness. Every human, without exception, experiences some of these kind of challenges. No one in this world is absolutely problem-free. It is just the nature of life. Some people may not have financial problems, but they may have family problems. Others might have financial struggles, but have strong families and good health. The Holy Book of Quran says, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم لقد خلقنا الإنسان في كبد. We have created man into constant toil. Surah Al-Balad, verse number 4. So how are we to understand and deal with these challenges? And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in his holy book, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم فَأَمَّا الْإِنسَانُ إِذَا مَبْتَلَاهُ رَبُّهُ فَأَكْرَمَهُ وَنَعَامَهُ فَيَقُولُ رَبِّي أَكْرَمًا وَأَمَّا إِذَا مَبْتَلَاهُ فَقَدَرَ عَلَيْهِ رِزْقُهُ فقدر عليه رزقه فيقول ربي أهانا كلا بل لا تكرمون اليتيم. As for man, when his Lord tries him by giving him honor and blessings, then he says, puffed off, my Lord has honored me. But when he tries him and restricts his provision, he says, my Lord has humiliated me. No, but you indeed do not honor the orphan. Surah Al-Fajr, verses number 15 to 17. So as you see in this verse, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sends difficulties not only in cases when he wants to punish his servants, but also when he loves one of his servants. He tests the servant with different types of tests and hardships. Hence, we can conclude that having and not having is not a sign of God's love. One may have a life full of challenges, poverty, and sickness. However, it is ultimately God's pleasure that is most important and the source of true happiness and peace. The Prophet ﷺ said, amazing is the affair of the believer. Verily, all of his affairs are good, and this is not for no one except for the believer. If something of good or happiness befalls him, he is grateful. And that is good for him. If something of harm befalls him, he is patient, and that is good for him. Okay, let's go for a short break, and we will be back in no time.